I needed something better than normal. I needed something better than ordinary. I needed something that was cutting edge science. After he had completed that race and crossed the finish line, in 7 minutes, his heart rate was down to 44.
Welcome everyone to episode 106 of the Sin Nutrition Podcast. You're with your hosts Brian and Peter today. And today is one of the most requested podcasts to date this year. And we are joined by the Australia's most famous endurance ride, the Tom Quilty Gold Cup winner, Ashley Cole. And for anyone that hasn't known, this is the biggest endurance event in Australia. It's 57 years of history. And Ashley's and her horse, Tonki Debu Novak, recorded the third quickest time and won the event. And we're so lucky to have her on the podcast today. And I'm here with Peter. How are you, Peter?
Bro, not too bad. I thought Joe Rogan was going to join us on a podcast the way you did that intro, bro, with the red carpet and everything.
Well, I think Ashley's worth it. And how are you, Ashley?
Yeah, look, I'm really well. Thanks, guys. Brian, Peter, thank you very much for having me on.
We're so happy to have you on to give our listeners a really good insight into the endurance horse world and this amazing result that you achieved. And we can't congratulate you enough to you and your horse as well. And Peter and I would just like to thank you for your support, because we only found out during the event that you were feeding the Send Feed program.
Yeah, I sure was, and very proud to be doing so. And like most things that I do, I don't like to shout it from the rooftops too much until maybe I get a good result. And I feel this result was good enough to be able to reach out to you guys and say, hey, you've got a great product. Look what I just did with it. And so I'm very proud to be talking about it. I've got a bit of a story as to why I started using it, how long I've been using it, what I've been using. And I'm really excited to be able to share that with the listeners. And I just want to let the listeners know that this is the first time I've met Brian and Pete. They approached me to come on a podcast. I was very humbled by the offer, because you guys are like my heroes. I've listened to all your podcasts, and so thank you very much for having me on.
No, actually, it's our pleasure. And I think just because your story's so real, I think it needs to be sort of heard out there. And look, without sort of further ado, do you want to maybe just let everyone know sort of how the journey started? And look, we'll put on a record, obviously, Ashley isn't a paid rider. We didn't even know that she was using, you know, the Send products. And some people, you know, assume, oh, well, you know, she's sponsored by Send or whatever. I think you will be an ambassador for us now, I'm hoping, after, obviously, this result. But if you just wanted to sort of maybe start from the first day that, because obviously you're from New Zealand as well, so a lot of people don't know that. Maybe just, if you can just let everyone know your journey, obviously how it started from New Zealand and how you came to Australia, how obviously you found Send, and then obviously we can fast track to you winning the event. So the microphone's yours.
Thank you very much. So the Tom Quilty Gold Cup is something that I've always been passionate about. Some could say I'm obsessed with it, and it's an obsession I've probably had since I was 18 years old. I'm 57, I think. 1967 baby now. So I'm getting up there a bit in years. I've got some bits that don't work properly. I've had a knee replacement. I've had a pretty hard life on sheep and beef farms. So that's how I was able to, I guess, live the life with horses now that I have, because I worked so darn hard on our own sheep and beef stations over the years. So I got my current horse, Tonki Debu Novak. He was bred in Tasmania by the Mahonies, who I have the most tremendous amount of respect for. They've bred some champion horses. Their stud name is Tonki Debu. Of course, Novak was blessed enough to get one of the most champion athletes of our century's name, so I'm pretty proud of that too.
It's a really interesting name.
It's a great name. Yeah, it's a great name. Love him or hate him, he's a super athlete.
Absolutely.
You know. And so I was put in an enviable position to be able to purchase the horse about 3 or 4 years ago. So he came over. Originally, I leased him, actually. I was just going to use him for breeding purposes, because his bloodlines are pretty phenomenal for producing endurance horses. And so I leased him. He came over to New Zealand on the boat, came on a boat. And that was back in the day where you could put a horse on a boat. Took him 3 days, and he arrived fatter than what he left Australia, and the people on the boat loved him. They called him the vacuum cleaner because he would eat everything that the other horse couldn't eat, so they were pretty appreciative of him. So he spent a season here with me in New Zealand, and then my lease ran out. I sent him back. About a month after I sent him back, the guy that owned him rang me and said, hey, I'll sell him to you now. And I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. Would have been cooler if I'd have known a month ago before I flew him back, but I'm not going to say no, thank you very much. So he flew back to New Zealand. And then I thought, I looked at this horse and I thought, geez, I'm gonna ride this bugger, you know. I'm going to ride me a stallion in endurance, which is, I mean, that's a big thing because, you know, you've got a lot to contend with when you ride a stallion. Stallions have got different rules in New Zealand for endurance. You've got to keep them in steel yards. They've got to wear tags. They've got to have blue ribbons. Couldn't even plait a blooming ribbon in the tail and when I got my stallion, so I learned how to plait something. If you ever met me and saw my head, I said I'm not very good at plaiting things. I'm good at using a handpiece and that. So I rode him the first day he got off the plane, the second time, and we've been pretty inseparable ever since. And we had that goal, we had that Tom Quilty goal in the back of our minds the whole time. You know, right when I took him through novice in New Zealand, we would compete a certain way, and some people would question the way I was competing, and I'd say, I'm not competing against anybody here. I'm competing, you know, for Australia. You know, I have to ride and train as if I'm competing in Australia. And we even brought a second farm because it was very Australia-ish. You know, it had hard roads and stones and rocks and boulders, and we affectionately call it Australia. It's on the Coromandel Peninsula. Anyone that is familiar with New Zealand geography, the Coromandel Peninsula is pretty bony and quite dry, quite Australia-ish. Although it's very Queenslandish at the moment, it's just so darn wet. So anyway, we got the opportunity to fly over to Australia to the Quilty, and I honestly thought it was a year too soon for him. Like, we were always aiming at South Australia in 2024 because South Australia is more like New Zealand's terrain than Queensland. And I kind of didn't really fancy my chances, but then I thought, well, you've just got to chalk up every experience that you can and, you know, grab it with both hands. So my husband had a work opportunity over there, and part of that work opportunity was to fly my horse over because they wanted my husband on the machines. They knew he wouldn't come without me. They knew I wouldn't come without my horse. So it was all part of the deal, which I was very grateful for. So we flew back to Australia. I had to do a couple of rides in Australia before the Quilty because how we race in New Zealand, they are, what do you call it? The qualifications didn't count towards my horse being able to compete at the Quilty. So I had to ride a couple of rides in New South Wales, and I had to join New South Wales to tick the boxes so that my horse could compete in the Quilty, even though he'd done some significant rides in New Zealand. At a competitive level, they just didn't count. So we had to tick the boxes. When I arrived over there, very, very close cohorts of mine, you call him my mentor, Jolene Cole, was on the CEN diet. And being Kiwi, we'd never heard of the product. We'd never heard of it. And so I listened to your podcast. I thought I was on a pretty good diet already. It was a very well-known company around the world, and it was the typical diet that we were all using, you know, where the oil is already pressed into the feed. You know, now I've done a bit of reading about that, and I'm not happy about that anymore. anyway, so I really loved the way her horses were looking, and I'd come from a pasture-based diet in New Zealand, and to be quite frank, horse was full of inflammation from the pasture, and I needed to find a product that was just going to take him to the next level that he had to go to be competitive at the Quilty. So we moved onto the CEN diet, and the basis of what we used were their lupins, and we didn't use the complete grain free. We used the lupins, the gold, CF50, and oats. And once again, I listened to all your podcasts, and I thought about the historical results that we used to have here in New Zealand back in the day, you know, when people used to do sub-9-hour, 160s, and, you know, I'm talking 30, 40 years ago. And back in those days, people fed oats. And that's always been something that's intrigued me, and it's always something that I was always a fan of doing, you know, during loops of endurance and after significant exercise, you know, to help, you know, starch with muscle recovery. But it wasn't something I felt comfortable enough incorporating into a main feeding training program until I started listening to your podcast. And he's a bit of a fat little pony, my boy. He'll eat anything, and you've just got to be on top of him all the time to keep his weight correct. So I'm very lucky like that. He's not a finicky eater. Although in saying that too, when he doesn't like something, he doesn't eat something. You know, he can toss his nose up at it too like any other horse. So I just found the premise that you base all your feeds around just hit home with me. You know, it made sense. It was logical. You know, about the oil that's pressed into the feeds, you know, just everything. I loved your CN oil. I loved everything. Are you going to make me talk about your secret ingredients that I use?
Oh, you can keep that up your sleeve. You can keep the extra supplements up your sleeve. But just for a little insight for our listeners that are unaware of that high fiber Sen lupin pellet that we have, it gave Ashley the ability to use the oats as the glycogen top up without doubling up on the grains. But then also the key thing is with that is there's no extra oils in the pellet, creating extra free radicals and potential antioxidant load. So the antioxidants that Ashley was using were actually going into recovery instead of combating a poor hard feed.
And my two cents too, that Ashley, just on top of Bryner, is oats are safe to feed, but obviously they need to be diluted down with the fiber in the lupin pellets. So it's all about balance. People, you know, like they try to blame something when a horse starts, you know, becoming irate or dangerous, but they don't look at what's actually contributing or causing a problem. They just blame one thing. And as we try to say on these podcasts, you got to balance the whole diet, not blame one individual ingredient. Mm.
But you can keep those up your sleeve, the other supplements.
Yeah, use that as your secret. Yeah, when we win next year in 2024, when you go back to back.
Yeah, 100%. So anyway, so I backed up my decisions. I like Nathematic. I like him a lot. And so I did a lot of blood testing because I wanted to know that I was on the right track and I didn't have time to play games or guess or second guess. I needed to know that my bloods were good. I used FeedXL to the point where I'm sure those girls were getting annoyed with me. You know, I'd send them an email and I'd say, can you add this CN product we need in the set? We need an FeedXL. And I annoyed them like crazy. I'd get hold of them and say, hey, can you put this in? Can you put that in? Put this in? Put that in? And I would just spend hours and hours and hours on FeedXL, you know, getting everything to balance up Yeah, and I liked what I found. I mean, you marry that up against my blood tests that I was getting. You know what? There were two things that really impressed me immediately. And the first thing was the proteins in my blood were immediately lower, and that was just about immediate. And with an endurance horse, that's really important. So that was the first thing that I saw. The second thing that I saw was actually in competition, and that was my gut sounds. That was something that I had historically not had trouble with to the point that it impeded my competition results, but it was impeding my horse because he was getting some B's for gut sounds. And it used to really annoy me because I like perfection a little bit, so it annoyed me. And it was one thing I noticed virtually immediately on the CEN diet was that my gut sounds right through the competition were beautiful. They were all A's and ones and as metabolics. And the other thing that I used to struggle with Novak was he used to get hangry during the actual event. And he's a man horse. He senses his stomach a lot. And he'd get really hangry around about 2 hours, I would think, into a loop if he couldn't eat. And he would literally get sour. His ears would come back. And well, he didn't have ulcers or anything, but he would just want to eat, need to eat. And that went away on the CEN diet. So, you know, maybe you guys can tell me why that happened. I don't know. He lost the hangry, and he could compete 3.5 hours in a loop without having to eat and still coming in with great gut sounds. So maybe you guys can tell me why that happened.
Yeah, firstly, I think it's that whole slow-release energy that you're providing. So not that over or imbalance of too much grain or too much sugar and starch. You've got that whole high-fiber base but quality fiber, digestible and indigestible. But also when you think about the horse's physiology with that gut-brain connection, that's helping him cope with that hangry thing. So his guts are in very, very good condition with that evidence from the noise. It's actually having a good, I think there's like 7 pulse connections to the brain and probably a few more, and that's satisfying him so he's not having that hangry symptom. But the other thing is actually for our listeners that are unaware of Tom Quilty and the whole setup. So we've got other industry listeners. So it's a 160-kilometer race with vet checks every 40 kilometers. Is that right?
Yep. This particular event was 44 kilometers and then a 40-minute hold, and then another 44 kilometers, 30-minute hold, and then 32, another 40-minute hold. Then, yeah, so there was 5 loops. And so you've pretty much got to go 44 kilometres without your horse having anything to eat. And I mean, a lot of people, they just want a buckle so that, you know, they can take anything up to 24 hours, and they'll do a lot of eating out on track. They'll eat grass, they'll eat there's loosen and stuff out on track for horses. But when you're at the pointy end and you're wanting to do a reasonable time, you haven't got time to eat. You know, you've just got to trust everything that you have fed and everything that you have done for months leading into the event. And then you've got to trust what happens to your horse and hold, and trust the food that you give your horse and hold.
Yeah, so animal welfare or horse welfare is at the forefront. So at each vet point check, can you take our listeners through what is involved in terms of the heart rate and
Absolutely. So your time is still running. The time on the clock is still running until you can present your horse with its heart under 60 beats a minute. So that's your first priority. As you come in over the start-finish line, the clock's still ticking, and you've got to cool your horse down or get your horse's heart rate down below 60 as quick as you can. Then you call time, the time finishes, and then you present to the vet. And the vet checks certain parameters. So they check your mucous membranes, and you get an A or a B for mucous membranes. Obviously, you want an A. Capillary refill. They check your cap refill, and you get either a 1 or a 2, you know, depending on how quickly that fills back up. Obviously, you want a 1. Skin recoil is another one. Another one, KPI, that checks the hydration. Heart sounds. So not only are they checking your heart rate, they're also checking your heart sounds, and obviously you like an A for that. Gut sounds is another one. We need to have a noisy gut, because guts are one of the gut measurement or gut sounds is a really big parameter to indicate if your horse is in trouble or not. So you want to get A's. Muscle tone is another one, you know, which is the first sign of any lactic acid issues, which can lead to big animal health problems. So you get your muscle tone checked. Once again, you're after an A. They check your back girth and withers. So the vet will actually run their hands, sometimes quite hard, over your horse's back and around the girth area and the wither area where the saddle sits, and they will mark your horse A or a B, or obviously a C is just about a vet out, so you want an A again. Your horse's legs will get checked to make sure that there's been no injury out on track, no other horses stood on you, which is quite a common thing when you're in a field of 200 plus horses. You've got to stay safe. And then, of course, if all that is fine, you'll be asked to trot. And The trot's usually 40 metres up, 40 metres back, and your gait will be checked by the vets. And if your horse is thought to be not, if your horse is thought to be limping, lame, then you'll get what we call a panel. So three other vets will come in and they will write on a piece of paper whether or not they think that your horse is lame or fit to continue. And then you'll be given the thumbs up, and then they'll say good luck, we'll see you in the next loop. So it's pretty stringent. The whole vet check takes anything up to 7 minutes, and that 7 minutes is eating into your 40-minute hold time. Yeah, so.
And how were your results, if we can ask?
My book was phenomenal. I'm actually, I read all that out of my book, so I got everything right, and I was just thrilled with it. We had A's and 1's all the way through. I got a B for mucous membranes on the second to last leg, but like he hadn't eaten or drunk anything that leg, and he was the end leg, right at the very end, all A's and 1's.
For our listeners, obviously, like from when you came into New Zealand, you would have been feeding something different in New Zealand, and obviously you, I'm assuming that you just sort of went cold turkey on the scent, because we obviously, like, you didn't contact us for a diet consult, but I can see that Feed Excel got a bit of a workout, and you sound like to be a very sort of perfectionist, like you know, like me and Brian. So everything that you've achieved, you've actually earned it, because you spent hours and hours and hours to put the focus on nutrition, because some people look at nutrition just as a, you know, oh well, it's a cost, it's just food, it's, you know, it's pony pellets or this and that. They don't realize that nutrition plays a vital role. So my question is, actually, when you were obviously, like, when you come over and you sort of jumped on the scent, like, you would have tweaked a few things to suit the horse. What were the biggest things, apart sort of from the you know, from the gut health that you noticed? Was there any behavior issues? That, obviously, being a stallion, not the easiest horse to ride, but if you can maybe outline just a couple of things you noticed instantly, or once the diet sort of kicked in, for our listeners, to what difference you felt on the send diet, the horse being on?
Okay, so as far as behavioural factors, I didn't notice anything, and I was looking for it. You know, that historical fear of oats, you know, is my horse going to be crazy? You know, so I was looking for it, and I couldn't see it. I definitely started noticing a difference in strength. And when I say strength, I mean, you know, his hindquarters, his hocks were really getting underneath him in training. And he was becoming a very strong and very powerful for a lot longer time. He'd always had a very low heart rate, but I reckon on the Sen diet, I dropped another 5 beats. And I can say that it wasn't a fitness thing, because he was fit when he came to Australia. It wasn't about making him fit. You know, we just won a 120-kilometre race a week before he flew over. The horse was fit. It was just my job to try and maintain that fitness. Towards the end, I must say that we did start looking more at training, like the lungs. You know, the muscles were there. The bone, of course, has been there for years. Then you train the muscle, and then when you're really leading into a big race, and you look at training the lungs, and I think any type of horse racing person will probably tell you that. I just only had to look at the lungs, and maybe there's a little bit of a giveaway there to my secret Sen product.
You mentioned that the horse... We won't ask you directly. Right. You mentioned that the horse, obviously, you know, with its withers in it, you know, look, I think the stride would have improved as well. You said, like, he was getting more underneath himself. For our listeners that don't know, the diet, like the Sen diet, is very low in sugar, very low in starch. I think we've got the lowest sugar and starch in Australia, if not the world, with the feed. So, because it's an anti-inflammatory diet, and what I mean by that is that it's high in fiber and high in fat, where sugar promotes inflammation. So I've said it sometimes on a few different podcasts, it's like you're putting in the octane 98 fuel for a sports car that's about to go and compete against all these other sports cars, where some of your competitors, they might be putting in octane 92 or octane 95. And that might be the difference between you actually winning that event and not winning the event, because I look at it as handbrakes. If you don't feed correctly, you're putting on additional handbrakes on a gifted horse. And look, like, that's not to say that your horse isn't gifted, but to get to that event where you were in, a lot of those horses to be there, they're all gifted horses. And I'm not sure how much you won by, but I don't think it was Well, 1 minute. So I'm willing to sort of go on record that that the Sendai, you know, would have helped that horse basically use that fiber, use that fat optimally, you know, conserve the glycogen stores from the oats to the very end part where you actually, you know, needed it most, rather than that lactic acid or the glycogen stores sort of kicking in too early, where you would have lost maybe possibly a minute or 2 minutes. So there's an actual science below the actual feed program, and everything is balanced. And then it's up to the actual trainer and the rider to know their horse, to know at, you know, what tempo, obviously, to maintain all those years and months of training that you went into. We just assisted all that with putting the right fuel into the fuel tank, and you know, everything else sort of fell into place.
Oh, look, it was huge. I mean, you have there are certain things that go through your head when you're out there and you're pushing your horse. You know, you're pushing your horse, you're pushing yourself, and there's a couple of things that sit in your mind, and the first one is trust the blood. Mm. So it's, you know, trust the blood of the horse. You know, you're asking your horse to do a lot, but you trust the blood. And the second thing is you trust the process.
Yep.
And you are 100% correct when you were talking about the fuel, the octane, you know, and it's about trusting the process. It's about trusting the work that you did. It's about trusting, you know, it's not just about me and the horse out there. It's about my crew back at camp. It's about the CEN people that developed the product. You know, it's about the vet I use to analyse my blood test. It's about Feed Excel that helped me to work out exactly what I was going to feed. It's all part of the big picture. And without those components, yeah, 100% correct. I wouldn't have won that without all of those components. And, you know, and I feel very humble about it. And it's about ticking boxes. It's about attention to detail. You have to have the attention to detail. It's, I think my eyes are getting quite big when I'm speaking about that. But it's just, you can't underestimate the attention to detail that you need. And just to put into focus, after he had completed that race and crossed the finish line, and 7 minutes, his heart rate was down to 44, 44.
Oof. I'm guessing that's really quick.
So he did.
To come down.
That was phenomenal. It blew me away. My crew was saying, Ashley, get in here and make a call. And I thought, oh, my God, they're going to tell me my heart rate's 125. My horse is just about dead. And I really stuffed up. And they all want to smack me with a bat, you know. And so I sort of in there and they said, you know, because right at that minute, I think we're about 6 minutes in and his heart rate was 48. And they said, Ashley, you've got to make a call. Do you want to go in now or what? And I'm like, I was in shock. I was just in shock. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a testament to the blood. It's a testament to the diet. It's a testament to how he can run anaerobically for as long as what he did. We were a little bit in front, so we cantered across those, and then I buttoned back. But we had pretty much been three-quarter pacing for the whole leg. And then as we sort of came into camp and you start thinking about the crew's got to get the heart rate down. And,
true.
You know, you're only going to gallop across the line for your ego. You're certainly not going to gallop across the line for your horse. You've got to start thinking about getting that heart rate down, you know. 100%. It doesn't matter if you're a minute or half an hour, one to one, I was going to take it. But then you've got to start thinking about getting that heart rate down. So
I'm going to put you on the spot, Ashley. Mm-hmm. So before the actual event itself, and I mean, you can be honest as well, did you think you, like, were you confident that you had a good chance of winning, or you just sort of left it up to the powers of be and see what happens?
No, oh, that's a really good question. I manifest hard, you know. I love that word.
We do too.
You know, you either love that word or you don't love that word, but I love that word. You know, I went and brought a new belt. It's what I was going to put my winning buckle on. I transposed a picture of the cup, stuck it in the corner of the living room.
Visualization.
You know. Amazing. Oh, visualization was huge. You know, it was like, you know, even when we were in vet after the final vet check, and I said to my best mate, Nads, who's always crewing for me around the world, I said to her, you do realise that when they give us the thumbs up that we're going to have to do that hugging stuff and, you know, pat the horse and stuff. You know, we didn't know how to act. You know, this was big. We'd visualised it was going to happen. You know, we really believed it was going to happen and it was happening and we didn't know what to do. You know, we just, you know, we just wanted to go and get a drink of alcohol and sit in the corner and go, yep, good, we did that, you know.
Count me in.
Yeah.
Job done. Mission accomplished. Yep.
Yeah, we did that. Yeah, okay. Now we'll just sit here in the corner and everybody can forget about us. And that didn't happen. So that was really weird. And it felt really surreal the whole time, you know, prize giving and stuff. You know, I mean, there's some great people that have won the Quilty. There's some names that I truly look up to. And there's a part of me that's honoured, and there's a huge part of me that just doesn't feel worthy to be mentioned amongst their names. You know, they're my heroes. And sometimes, yeah, I just want to punch myself that it's happened. It doesn't feel like it's happened.
And it definitely has happened, because, Ashley, when I read what the summary, only two Quilty winners have gone faster than you in that 160 kilometres. So in 2010, Brooke Sample, and in 1996, Mark Haig. So you recorded the third quickest time in the 57-year history. Just gives me goosebumps.
But I tell you what, though, the competition that was out there, they made me do that time. You know, because in any race, you only ever go as fast as what you have to go.
Yep.
You know, and I had five people out there that you could say more than five. Yeah. Matt and Nikki Sample, you know, they owned the complex. They owned the ground that we were racing on. You know, they pushed the pace. You had Catherine Bailey on a horse she's about to take to World Champs in France. You know, they chased hard, and there was a few other people out there, and, you know, you wanted to win that race, you had to go fast.
Your back was to the wall, because obviously they had a home ground advantage. You have to come from New Zealand. Look, I find this fascinating. Uh-huh. I find it fascinating in many aspects, because some people might just think, oh, well, you know, you just got a good horse and, you know, like you're a good rider and then you win. But Alistair can see it's not just the horse, it's not just the rider, it's not just the feed. There's a lot of rider mental sort of games that goes into, you said, with your visualization and then obviously, you know, believing that you can actually win and just seeing it. So somebody comes and jump on a horse and go, well, I'm going to win it. That's why there's only one winner and there's, you know, 99 people that don't win, because it's an actual process that you have to go through. And that's why it's a grueling event. B, mentally, you have to be strong. You said you have to trust the process. Your horse needs to be, you know, mega fit. You know, you've got a stallion as well that could get up to, you know, his own games as well when he sees something go past him. So, like, I'm sort of a bit in awe, to be honest with you, like, with this interview. I didn't think it was going to go this way. Frankly, like, I'm just like, I've got so much respect for you for what you've gone through. And I can see why people look up to this event, because it's, as I said, it's not just the rider, the horse. It's like a big wheel with like 100 different cogs, and you got to get every cog right in order for that wheel to spin and win.
You're dead right about that. I mean, the horse was good, but it was his very first 160-kilometer race. I'm 57 years old. I've got a knee replacement. I can't run. You know, I don't get off and run down the hills like my young opponents. Everything hurts. You know, I think, that hurts now, but don't worry about it, because something else is going to hurt more in 5 minutes. Time, you just make sure you stay straight and you make sure your horse doesn't even know you hurt, you know. So, and I guess that's where your mind comes into play, because, man, you've got to be strong upstairs, you know. You've got to be able to block pain, and you've got to put your horse before everything.
I'm just thinking, like, if there's any, like, movie producers listening to this, like, they should really make a movie about, like, you and this, because, I mean, I could see it just blowing up, because there's so many aspects of it, and it gives people hope and sort of faith. And if everyone's, you know, if someone's sort of doubting themselves, if they look at you, what you achieved, and for the valid reasons you just mentioned, there's so many things that I think a lot of people, like, from a personal side, they get beaten by their own mind. Like, they've lost, like, you know, like you talk about Novak. I read somewhere or I heard somewhere, they say that, like, guys like Novak and Rafa and sort of Roger Federer, they win the match before they step on the actual court, because their opponents are in awe of those players, like multiple Grand Slam champions. So if you go in there on the court, and I mean, I can put myself, if I'm going to play Novak, I mean, I'm going to be running for the locker rooms before I go out into the court, because mentally, if you don't believe you can beat Novak, you've lost the game before even, you know, before, like, the first ball is hit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
and I guess that manifestation. You know, it was, you know, when you have belief in yourself, you have belief in your process, you have belief in the blood of your horse. Yeah, it's pretty. I think you're pretty hard to beat. I think.
I said
to myself, and I said to my people, I said, you know, we're going for the win. If we get beaten, I said it's going to be by a bigger and better champion than us on the day, and I will bow down to that horse and that rider, and I will say congratulations. You know, because I knew it was going to take one heck of a champion to beat us on that day.
Well, my goal for next year for you is to win 2024, but actually run it in the fastest time ever. So you're going to get the customized service from me and Brian on your next event. We'll even fly there to push the horse up the hill if it needs to.
You might wait till I see you into sponsoring me to fly my horse over for I'm a little bit skint now.
The checkbook's open already. Don't worry, I just got to sign it.
You can pitch anything. Just going back to the manifesting, your mindset and everything, Ashley. I think it really gels well with Peter and I. As Peter said before, we are very positive people as well. We like to manifest and do the right thing, especially with our company, with the horse, have a reason why we feed a particular way, but have multiple justifications to then have a healthier, happier horse and get them to reach their ability and their potential ability. Mm-hmm. And then you as a rider has ticked that box and can worry about obviously the training and the whole horse management side. But I did a little bit of research and there was another interview that you did regarding about how it isn't that easy just to become an endurance rider, like in terms of your balance you have to have on the horse over those 160 kilometers, if you want to elaborate on that.
Well, just that you know, you have to ride correctly. You can't just flop about. You need to be able to be straight, and you need to understand changing kennel leads and changing diagonals, and you know, and even before the actual event, you need to understand body work, and you need to understand every muscle in your horse and how it's put together, and is everything in your horse balanced. So you need to analyze everything. You know, you need to listen to podcasts. You need to watch YouTube. You need to take every opportunity to study videos of yourself and get people to video your riding, and you need to pull it apart, and you need to look for improvement all of the time.
It's all those 1%ers.
It's, you know, and if there's ever obviously a deserving person, so it's yourself. But like you said, you made it almost an obsession, which Brian and I sort of mm-hmm. do a very similar thing with the feed. And, you know, we don't go out there chasing business. Like, you know, we want to have our feed program into every rider's barn. That's not even close to where we're at. We're more about attracting the right person. You know how like sort of universe attracts different things. And I think you attracted us, we attracted you. It was just sort of meant to be, and it mm-hmm. fell into place. And everything that you're saying, the hours and hours on Feed Excel that you spent, you know, tinkering with the diet, making sure everything is right. Well, that's how Brian and I do the same thing on the feed. Like, you know, we're just about to, and Brian, I'll mention it here. You know, we've just upgraded our lupin pellet, which is now going to have a marine source calcium and a marine source magnesium plus extra amino acids. Mm-hmm. And that's only going to benefit horses with ulcers. It's going to benefit breeding stock. It's going to benefit people not feeding an additional calcium supplement on top of their hard feed, where they can actually have it inside the feed itself. So the point I'm trying to make is we're always trying to innovate the product, always trying to improve it, obviously trying to keep the cost as low as we can, but in a day trying to create something that actually gets results.
Yeah, improve performance.
I'm really excited about this new product because my main business is breeding horses, and Tonki Debu Novak, he's got about 36 progeny on the ground here on my farm in the Coromandel, and we're predominantly Kaikouia, and Kaikouia can affect the absorption of calcium. So I'm pretty excited about this new product and getting it into the young ponies, yeah.
Actually, ears were burning 6 months ago. That's why we, you know, like telepathy, we got the message, and I said, Ron, we got to do this because we've got to meet the right person that will
scream it in New Zealand. Yeah.
Yeah, scream it in New Zealand.
Yeah. But we don't...
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, we don't take any of these changes lightly. Like Peter and I have researched into this marine source calcium for over 7-8 months, and we do all the background journal checks. We go through the science to make sure it checks out, and we don't make changes lightly, but every piece. And we will have education podcasts and reels and everything to help people understand why this fully benefits a horse in every stage of their life and why it's required if we want to get the best out of their performance or their ability. But hearing about that grass type, that's one of the main drivers as well, that we're coming into people having to reach for more calcium, but why not have it all in one?
And also, Brian, you know, like, 100%. You know, and also we get sort of even more specific in terms of what type of calcium, because most people just throw, you know, the calcium carbonate, which we know for a fact isn't as well absorbed as a more natural marine source calcium.
Yeah, correct. And
got a bit of iodine in too, which is pretty exciting.
Just naturally, what comes out of it. So it's got, I think, on top of the marine calcium, magnesium, it's got, I think, 32 other minerals as well through it. So we'll, I think we're going to launch it in the next 3 or 4 weeks. So you're sort of the first cab off the rank that we've actually mentioned it to. But we are excited about it. And it's, as I said, it's more about saving people time and money, because if you don't have to feed an additional supplement, you know, if you can just give it one feed that's already got it in there, it is going to save you time and it's going to save you money. And if you've got 36 old foals, you know, to feed as well, surely if you can do it all in one and not in two, it ticks that box.
Pretty exciting.
It is. Peter and I look at the industry and make observations and try and come up with those solutions and innovate in a way that's highly effective for the horse. And Ashley, I think maybe we give our listeners an insight to what you do in New Zealand as you reside over there as a farmer.
Yeah, thank you. So my main business now is my stallion, Tonki Debu Novak. And so I'm 24/7 now breeding and raising his babies. So that was one of the big key drivers why I felt that he had to do well in Australia, was to promote him and his business. And, you know, to help sell his babies offshore. We're considering selling semen now, but no, there's still a big part of me that just thinks, you know, hey, I've got all these babies in this paddock. You want to own a Novak, you come and buy a baby, you know. Yeah, and they're beautiful Anglo types, and there's purebreds there, and they've all got his eye and they've all got his heart, and they're pretty special. So that's what I do.
Well, if we can win again next year, actually in 2024, hopefully that semen's going to quadruple in price, if not 4 times that as well, with a bit of luck.
How cool would that be?
We're actually looking at bringing a feed into New Zealand. Obviously, Ashley's going to be a driving force to open a few doors for myself and Brian into New Zealand. It is a market, obviously, that's just across the ditch, and it's a huge market. There is sort of, you know, horse fanatics as what they are in Australia. So for our sort of New Zealand listeners, which there are a few, we've checked on the Spotify stats, just sort of stay tuned. We are going to be looking at obviously doing what Ashley has been feeding with the Loop and Pella Plus, the CF50, and then eventually the supplements as well. Because obviously for all those babies of Novak as well, you want to get them to the best start possible. And as you mentioned, you've got the high oxalate pastures at the property. There's nothing better than having a marine source calcium and magnesium to basically correct that deficiency, which is going to give those foals every opportunity, obviously, whether you keep them or whether you on-sell them, to go as good as the dad, if not better as well. And it all starts when they're young, because obviously the time and money investment nutrition that you put into the actual foals when they're growing, the owner, the breeder, is going to get dividends out of that. And we are noticing even in Australia, we've got a couple of stud farms that we work with. The younger horses that get put onto the Sen diet, their growth plates close 6 months quicker than previously when they had, the younger horses on a high sugar, high starch diet. So look, we don't have scientific journals on it. This is just observations that we're seeing, but this is 3 or 4 different farms that have told us the same thing. So I think we're onto something.
Yeah, but also the scientific journals that we do reference, it's not exactly using our feed, but the profile we're trying to hit has that reduction in like OCDs, also just all that structural strength or bone density of a younger foal, and then also the gut health of the younger foal, or the weanling is in a lot better shape when it's a high fiber, low sugar, low starch diet, and Sen's there to execute it in a more pure form, so you're not got other rubbish in that pellet, basically.
Yeah, it's heading home what you're saying to me, and I couldn't help but think about when you were talking about OCD and other things. Is you can grow, spend a lot of money growing a horse out and breeding it, and then you get to 4 or 5 years old and it's ready for sale and you head for a vet check and it's got a blooming bone splint somewhere. So it makes me feel better as a breeder knowing that there's people like you guys who are behind us with a product who have thought about these things, that have you thought about what matters. So
Well, most people actually, like you mentioned that example, you know, like the 4 or 5 year old, and you know, like then the owner wants to start throwing everything but the kitchen sink at fixing that bone problem. The problem with that is it's too late. Like the damage has been done, and it's hard for people. And this is the challenge we have, is, you know, like prevention is better than cure. The issue is people have to do the prevention, feed correctly, do it when the horse is growing, do it at the early stages. And, you know, there are people that are catching on. Well, obviously, you know, it might cost you a little bit more. Most of the time it doesn't cost anymore when you really run the figures on our program. But the health advantage and the longevity of the horse that you're going to get for the future, sometimes it's hard for them to see the money they spend today will come to fruition in 2-3 years' time, where they might cut corners today, but then if the horse at 3 or 4 starts falling apart, have you really saved money or have you just wasted 3-4 years of your life?
Oh, 100%. 100%. You know, it's about not being able to, what's the saying? You can't afford not to do it. You just can't afford not to do it. And can I just quickly talk about the affordability of the CEN diet? That blew me away. So I probably in New Zealand fed the most expensive diet you could lay your hands on, you know, because I figured that cost the most, it had to be the best. And onto the CEN diet in Australia, it just blew me away on how affordable it was and on how those stables that are running 5-6 top-level horses, how affordable it is for them to be able to do that. And I certainly can't wait to get my hands on it here because, you know, I can afford to feed my young horses how they need to be fed. And if I want to run more than one horse at top level, I can afford to now. Yeah, the CEN diet enables that, I believe.
It's fantastic feedback.
Yeah, on the outside, some people, you know, like if they're comparing a bag price to bag price, or they're looking like, you know, at a so-called equivalent product, you know, they might think, oh, well, you know, that's a bit expensive. But if you look at the how much you feed, which is not very much, we're all about obviously, you know, getting the right roughage and then correcting any vitamin mineral deficiencies with the oil or supplements. So you're 100% right. 9 times out of 10, we work out cheaper than even most conventional diets that are asking the person to feed 4, 5, 6, God forbid, 7 kilograms a day of a product in one bag to one horse. But we do work out 9 times out of 10 cheaper. So thank you for that.
Yeah. And additionally, to what Peter said, there are key differences to how Sen makes our feed and our supplements. And we have been going since 2014. And I think we wouldn't be around if we were doing the wrong thing by the horse. We just keep growing in that nice organic setting with riders and professionals like yourself that come and absorb all the information, get the results, and then teach others to look after their horse in the best way possible through nutrition.
Yep.
And yeah, we just can't thank you enough for coming on this podcast to tell your story, Ashley.
Oh, well, back at you guys, I can't thank you enough for the role that you played in our one, and you did, and I thank you.
I think it takes a special person as well, sort of, you know, my sort of parting ways. I think it takes a special person to understand the concept that we have, because it is sort of totally opposite to what the industry has been taught. And Ashley did mention that she spent hours and hours mucking around with sort of Feed Excel and tinkering and everything like that. So it just proves that what we have, obviously, we know that it works, but it takes a special person to understand it. You got to get your head around it. You got to change those old habits that you used to from previous feeding, from, you know, from granddad to dad to, you know, uncle, auntie, whatever that's been passed down. And, you know, they're saying, well, it's worked for 100 years, like it'll work today. Well, no, sorry, science changes every month. So what's worked 100 years is not going to work. And that's, you know, that's evident by the Olympians. You know, they're training differently, they're eating differently, they're doing, you know, different carbohydrates, different proteins, different fats. So I think the horse industry has taken a while to actually change. It's like a snowball that's slowly going down the hill, gaining momentum. And I think Brian and I are there just to sort of give it a bit of a push, but more so explain it in layman's terms so anyone that wants to invest their time, and that's what it is. The key thing is you got to invest your time to understand it. You can't just look at the bag and go, oh, that's expensive. Oh, that doesn't work because I fed it for 1 day or 2 days. Oh, my horse won't eat it. Oh, you know, it doesn't like it, but I've been feeding it, you know, eight liters of molasses with a, you know, with a grain-based feed. Well, of course it's not going to eat it because it's used to molasses. You know what I mean? I'm not having to go at anyone, but just trying to make it really just a blunt point that it does work. You can get, you know, World Cup events, you know, Australian leading events. If you get your head around it, if you implement it, you've got myself and Brian Magellan here that you can reach us, you know, nine till four every day. There's not many businesses in Australia that you can call the directors of a company and have a one-to-one phone call with us and actually ask us point-blank questions. Hey, I'm doing this. Is it right? You know, like, tell me why it works. Tell me why it doesn't. So, you know, it's not to sort of blow our own horns, but we're approachable people. We're, you know, we're genuine down-to-earth people and we really want to help. We're not just here, you know, to make $1 million and sort of run away and disappear in, you know, the Bahamas or something.
Yeah, correct. We're doing it the right reasons, the right intentions, and the horse comes first at the end of the day.
Oh, 100%. And also, what's that old adage, you know, if you want to get what you've always got, then just keep doing what you've always done, you know. Yeah. There are adjustments out there. Open your mind to them, you know. If you want to step up, step ahead, then open your mind, you know, reach out for these new concepts, study them, think about them, you know, and not just advancements in feeding, but advancements in training. You know, get, what is it, get bigger, get better, or get out.
Yep.
Correct.
Actually, I've got one question on the side, and it just, like, it came to me now. So in terms of, like, when you came from New Zealand and obviously you came to Australia, you didn't hear about us. So did you have an intention to just a feed, like a locally made feed, or were you going to try to do something similar to what you're doing in New Zealand? Like, how did it just fall into place?
I didn't know what I was going to do. I knew I had to do something because I believed in my heart of hearts that the diet that I had been using in New Zealand just wasn't good enough for me to step it up to the next level. It just, I needed something better than normal. I needed something better than ordinary. I needed something that was cutting edge science. And so I went looking for it. And then I started noticing the other horses around me that I felt threatened by, you know. And then I thought, yeah, that horse looked good. What's that horse eating? You know, oh, who's these guys? Who's this Brian and Pete person? Am I going to start listening to podcasts? I've never listened to podcasts. I've listened to Joe Rogan. That's it. I've never listened to anyone other than Joe. You know, and then I had to, you know, learn who this Pete Bryan was, you know, and so I'm skipping through all your podcasts, and my husband got sick of the side of me with my AirPods in, listening to these podcasts, you know. And then I'd go to people that were using it, and I'd start talking to them about it, and then we'd go to the local supply people. I'd go, I want a bag of this, I want a bag of that. And I'd go, oh, we just sold the last bag, you know, we'll have another bag in next Thursday. And I'm like trying to say, hey, do you guys know what you're selling? You need to up your game here, man. You need to supply us all with this product. We all need this product. It's not good enough that we can use it for 1 week and then can't get it the next week. So, yeah, had a few run-ins with the local suppliers. But, no, I'd never heard of you guys. I didn't know what I was going to do. And I knew that the more I listened to your podcast, the more I felt lucky to get away with what I had been using. For a lot of the reasons that I guess are people that have going to now listen to your podcast or they already are, they'll know already what I'm talking about, you know. And I'm not talking about the fear factor either. And I mean, that's how most people sell stuff, is through fear. But what you talk about is common sense.
Correct.
And I couldn't believe that I was putting that shit into my horses. Yeah.
To be frank. Yeah. No, we get that very often, to be honest with you, that what you just said, I can't believe I'm putting shit into my horses. Because the thing is, there's not many alternatives to what we offer. And the thing is, when you're new into an industry, I mean, it's coming on to 10 years next year, so we're not really new. We're just probably lucky with Brian that we started when we were pretty young, so we can sort of get through it. But with anything new, you're going to get pushback. People, oh, nah, it's worked for 100 years. Nah, sorry, not interested, sorry. But as I said, I keep coming back, it comes back to a special person wanting to educate themselves. But I think for you is you sort of trusted the process and you had belief that you'd find the right thing rather than like getting into your head and panicking and trying eight different feeds in 8 weeks. You just sort of said, all right, take a breath. All right, this horse is looking good. What are you feeding? What are you doing? You actually went through the whole process. And you know what? I'm not surprised you aren't, because the amount of hours that you spent doing everything, like, you know, as I said, from the feeding, from the training, from the people around you, it just shows you that nothing beats hard work. And you can't just lob on a horse, go ride 160 odd kilometers and expect to win without doing any work for it. It just doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't happen. Yeah. But you know what I like the most about what you guys do? And one of the main reasons I went onto your feed was because you had stripped the whole process back. Mm. Like, you took something that was really complicated and you stripped it back and you made it simple. Yeah, that's what you did, and that's what you did for me. You made it simple.
And I think, you know, that's sort of by design, and it's not because a lot of people don't know, Brian and I are not from sort of horse backgrounds. Like, we're not from horse families. We've had passion for horses, but we're not, our parents weren't horse people. Our grandparents weren't horse people. We sort of got thrown into the industry without really, I wouldn't say wanting to be in industry, but I think we found that was, like, the industry needed such a shake up and the products didn't exist. So we thought, like, wow, well, if it doesn't exist and everyone's feeding so wrong, we sort of got thrown in the deep end. And for us to understand it, we had to simplify the process. And it was sort of by coincidence that once we got our head around it, the way that we understood it is the message that mm-hmm. we're echoing to horse people, which I think it's working really well.
Yeah, we didn't have any preconceived ideas on feeding horses. I came from a human blood background and then applied that knowledge to horse blood. Peter resonated with mm-hmm. his drive to find answers and not just settle for what was the norm, because we knew the human health was changing, particularly gut health wise. How come our animals, especially our dogs and our horses, why is this not changing? And we even had to seek professional advice mm-hmm. in America, because they become the forefront thinkers to what then happens in Australia and then apply it. But then mm-hmm. there's another key aspect to that is finding pure ingredients, the best quality ingredients. There's so much smoke and mirrors out there, and that's what we pride ourselves on, that's effective. And then, as you said, it is affordable when you break it all down with the cost yep. benefit. But I think, Ashley, we both resonate on that mindset level. That's one thing mm-hmm. a lot of our scent ambassadors, we all have this real positive mindset, and the horse comes first at the end of the day, which is amazing.
And from my end too, just I'd like to add, like, if someone's out there listening and is sort of sitting on a fence, you know, like, do I do the scent? Do I not do the scent? I think Ashley is a bit of an inspiration to those people. And look, if you still have doubts after listening to this, as I said, Brian and I, Magellan here, we're available. If you've got that one question that's holding you back, call us, ask us. You know, we can knock it on the head straight away. And at least be honest with you. As I said, we're not for everyone. We don't want to feed every horse in Australia, because it does take a special individual to get the whole process, as it took us, you know, 9 yep. years, and we're still learning every year, like, by innovating products. You know, we're not just sitting there doing nothing, you know, waiting for the sales to come in. We're looking at improving our existing products, and for us to stay ahead of everyone else, which I think we're probably 10 years ahead of where the industry is. But maybe with your success, and I'm very confident you can win again next year, without a doubt, with your success, it might just sort of nudge some people and go, oh, well, you know, maybe feeding high fiber diets to a fiber fermenter, a horse that's a vegetarian, is actual common sense, rather than trying to load it with 7 kilograms of grain to a vegetarian. I mean, if that's not common sense, I don't know what is.
Yeah, yeah, amen to that.
Maybe Ashley might have a lot more competition with people switch their foundation to Sen next year.
But how great is that, though? Yeah. I mean, that you just nailed. I mean, you can't get better unless your competition gets better. You know, you've got to help other people get what they want to get what you want. That's why you do what you do. Correct. That's why you're helping me get what I want, because you're going to get what you want. You know, and. You know, I mean, I've been joking right from the start of this podcast about my secret ingredient, you know. It's good. I really hope that people pound on your door and say, what's that secret ingredient? You know, I'm going to tell everybody what that is, but not today.
Correct. Yeah. And it's only one piece of the puzzle. There's many factors. You're ticking every 1% box, and every horse has different abilities. You have to get these gifted horses all the right tools to even be 1 to 2% mm-hmm. better, and that can mean that 1 minute or 2 minute better in a 160 kilometer ride. 100%. Yeah.
And I think what you just said there about
nails.
You know, like Brian said about, oh well, you know, like you might get more competition with people jumping on sand. Yeah, that's possibly right. But I think your answer to that, you know, you said that's great because it's better for the horse. It just speaks, drives of the person that you are. Like, you know, some people might just go, oh no, don't tell anyone. You're like, look, tell the world. End of the day, like the person that you are is you, and you're driven, you're motivated, you want success, you attract success. Like if someone does it better than you and they're on the send feed, well, you know, we all can't win every event every single year. Like, you know, there might be, you know, a feed company. Yeah, yeah. There might be other factors that contribute, maybe a bit of bad luck, the weather or you know, bumps its leg or what so forth. But I like the way that you're very optimistic. You're not sort of jealous. You're not holding everything to you. And you were happy to come on a podcast to share your story. And I think it shows how genuine all of us are, between yourself, Brian, and me, that we're sort of alike. And end of the day, like if you do good, good karma will come back to you. And you know, we can both get a better night, you know, lie straight in bed knowing that we've done a good day's work and that we've at least improved one horse and had obviously recognized success with, you know, with your success. And I think over time, it's almost 10 years, you know, like it's taken us probably 10 years to get a big result like we have with you. But I think it just shows you that chipping away, just keep on improving, do the right thing. Eventually the credit will come back to you.
Awesome sentiment. Just about made my eyes wet.
Yeah, I got a bit emotional then too. I think
we'll
probably now finish off with something that, if you want to let listeners know, Ashley, if there's anyone you want to like to thank, or we can round it off at that. I think it's nearly eaten into gin o'clock, Pete.
I think we're going to, the three of us will be crying soon. I need some tissues to wipe the bench. But it's been an emotion. But yeah, Brian's right. Is there anyone you'd like to sort of thank?
Thank you,
Ashley.
Oh, thank you guys for giving me the opportunity. It was mammoth taking a horse from New Zealand to Australia, and I had so many good people around me. I mean, we had no horse, we had no transport, we had no vehicle. You know, I had people come forward with vehicles and floats and help, and I had crew fly from England, I had crew fly from New Zealand, you know, at significant cost. You know, they hired camper vans and they took time out of their lives because they believed in me and they believed in my vision. I want to thank my husband. He is so tolerant. I'm so hard to live with. And he's just so placid and amazing. And you know what? He misses dogs so much. He's got these little dogs. And maybe there's another podcast there, because he is so excited about the potential of being able to feed Sen to his dog.
Fantastic.
After seeing what they did for us. Yeah. So, yeah. So, hey, thanks, Brian and Pete. It's been an absolute pleasure. It's an honour to be associated with you guys and the Sen product. And when I rocked up to Magellan's tent and said, hey, I use Sen, take my photo, I knew I was going to win, you know.
Amazing.
And I thought, I want to be able to thank you guys. I want this photo. Yeah.
I think you attracted it to you, like you said. It's that visualization. It's just believing in the process and leaving it sort of to the universe, and what will be will be.
We're so grateful for your time, your support, for sharing your story, Ashley. Like, I think that weekend I had to go back to that photo and go, hey, that was Ashley Cole. And then I looked at the result. That was Ashley Cole. Goosebumps, emotion. I messaged Pete. I said, I think the Tom Quilty winner was on Sen. And yeah, it just, like, this is the one of the most grueling events. Like, it really showcases the ability of a horse and what they're capable of, plus looking after their welfare, which is the number one thing. And it just is emotional that something that Peter and I are so passionate about has helped someone that's well deserving as you, and that's equally passionate in your sport, to get that absolute top result is just goosebumps, emotions, everything.
Yeah. And from my end too, like for me, I get like real satisfaction that Ashley's gone out and done it off her own back. You know, I'm sure a lot of the riders that we're going against you are sponsored, whether it's free feed or whether it's, you know, money or what so forth, you know, to help them, you know, to try to win the event so they can get the bragging rights. But I like what we have accomplished with you is that you've gone off your own back. You know, we've created this, you know, somehow we've actually, you know, crossed paths by accident and then, you know, you've taken a photo with Magellan, you've won the event. We haven't paid you anything for it, but we will be paying you something for it next year. Don't worry about that. Yeah. And we're happy to advertise it to the world. But that it's happened off your back and off our back, that it's like naturally, organically, that's what I'm really proud of. And it's literally made my year.
Yep.
Oh, well, congratulations, guys, because your product's phenomenal. And I'm just honoured to have come across it and even more honoured to have won the Tom Quilty Gold Cup. So thank you, guys.
After listening to your story, it could not have happened to a nicer person. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart to you as well. You know, what you, the grit, determination, the never say die attitude, you know, I'm gonna believe it, I'm going to do it. I'm sure internally you would have felt, look, you know, I'm confident you've got the doubts in your head, but internally in your heart, you would have felt like, look, I can do this. And you just left the process to what it'd be. You ticked every box. You know, everything you could have done to your ability, you did. And I think it just shows you got the actual result. So I'm going to have a drink tonight, that's for sure, because I'm just pumped. I want to have one now, and it's not even lunchtime. But
And I think it'll be a cheers to you, Ashley.
A cheers to you. You're an inspiration to me and Brian as well. Like listening to what our products have done motivates us to create new products, to improve our existing products, you know, go the natural way, you know, try to prevent things from happening later in life for horses. You know, it just gives you goosebumps. It gives you motivation to get out of bed every single day to improve. And look, there's not many sort of family-owned businesses in Australia as well. There's only probably three or four feed companies that are actually family-owned. Everyone else is owned by venture capitalists and sort of, you know, being bought out by different companies. So, you know, I keep sort of dragging on. Anyone can call me and Brian. You know, we don't have any intention of selling. We're still relatively young, you know, even though I think I've aged a bit since we started this business, but I wouldn't trade it for anything else. And I mean, like, we come to work in the morning and we leave and it's like, geez, we can't come back.
Yeah,
where'd the time go? We can't come back tomorrow because there's so much to do. It's not funny.
Yeah, no, very, very grateful for your time, Ashley. We will wrap this up now. Big congratulations from all the Send team, including Magellan. She loved talking to you. She was emotional.
She wanted to come on the podcast, but I said no. I ripped the microphone out of her hand.
There's only room for two.
Three's a crowd, isn't what they say?
She was all right. She wish you a big congratulations. And
yeah. Thank you, guys. You take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ashley. Thank you.